George Lucas and Steven Spielberg might have been filling the cinemas with their rocket dreams, but all of a sudden, Britain became the world's number one exporter for a clever, knowing, gleeful prose version of the most despised kind of pulp of all, space opera, with its space fleets and space battles and cheerfully incredible counterpart to the sombre, orchestral scheme of things to come.
Think of well-intentioned hippies with really big weaponry.
The daddy of the new British space opera, the moonlighting literary novelist Ian Banks.
The warship looked about its internal systems. All was ready. It powered up its engines slowly to accelerate gradually, sleekly away into the void. As it moved, it left a skein of space behind it, seeded with mines and hyperspace missiles.
Outrageous bits of action and large explosions and very large structures hitting, well, even larger structures. I mean, hitting the biggest pram in all the world and all the toys, and you know, to throw them at the prams as often as I like.
It sped on through the dark hours of distance that to mere light were decades, radiant in its martial swiftness.
Widescreen baroque, that's a phrase I always absolutely adored. Space opera in a particular type.
It looped high out of the four-dimensional range of infraspace, sweeping its sensors across the screen and readying its weapon systems.
I'd seen Star Wars and I'm quite impressed, but I thought, I could do better than that. I've got a bigger special effects budget for a start.
Soon, very soon, it would die. But it would die gloriously. It fell upon the oncoming ships like a raptor upon a flock.
But for all the jokes and the knowing pleasures, Banks had a serious political intent, cosmic radicalism even.
Once upon a time, over the gravity well and far away, there was a magical land where they had no kings, no laws, no money, and no property, but where everybody lived like a prince and was very well behaved and lacked for nothing. And these people lived in peace. But they were bored, because paradise can get that way after a time. And so they started to carry out good works, charitable visits upon the less well-off, you might say. And they always tried to bring with them the thing that they saw as the most precious gift of all, knowledge, information, and as wide a spread of that information as possible, because these people were strange, in that they despised rank and hated kings. These nice people are called the culture.
Some people would absolutely hate the culture. There's no doubt about it. In the end, it's only a story. I may be wrong. Maybe if there is a sort of science fiction or a space operatic future ahead, it will be deeply horrible and nothing like the culture, and it'll be laughed at. If anyone remembers it at all, as some sort of idiot socialist dream or whatever, and completely out of the question in terms of the realities of building a life in space or whatever. It's just what I imagine. But there has to be that dissidence. There has to be that sort of counterculture argument. You can't let one philosophy get away with completely taking over a genre. And I think science fiction is a very important genre indeed. Space opera within it has serious things to say. It may be bit mad and with far too big a budget for its ideas, but that doesn't matter. It's still a part of science fiction, and as such it matters. It's about people's dreams. It's about what we think about when we think about the future.